Welcome, everyone, to our March 2018 overview of what's happening this month for the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School members. We're so excited to share what's coming up with you. And just a couple of announcements. One is that Tammy and I are starting another Venus Alchemy class on March 8th. It'll be right before the, 10 days actually, before the first gate when Venus is reclaiming her royal robe, root chakra energy. So if you haven't joined us for that, we'd love to have you, and let me know, because, or maybe I'll just send out a note to all the members that you get a special rate for that class. So, and I think, Daniel, you have also something you want to share.
Oh, yeah, just a couple of things. Actually, Eric and I will start another Mars one in July, August, and somewhere in that time, because we're beginning a new Mars overtone coming up here after 26 months of the current one. I will be hosting in Bali the basic script and archetype class together with Levi, and that'll be in May 10th through 16th, actually extended about a day and a half longer, so there's time to check out a couple of amazing places there in Bali as part of the course. And then our Ireland trip still remains a sellout, although there is still room for one person who wants to be a part-time driver. And we are still we're definitely offering a huge discount if anybody out there wants the last minute to want to join our trip. We have our 24 people, but we still need that one more part-time driver. And that's coming up August 26th. I think that's all I've got at the moment. So let's dive in.
Yeah, go for it.
So I'd like to begin by just going over the disposition of the visible planets. And actually, there's a lot of good stuff in March for those of you that have gotten into the watching the planets in the morning and the evening. Let me start with Mercury. This is actually currently the best visibility in the evening sky for the Northern Hemisphere in all of 2018. And Mercury will be in the evening sky going all the way up to a minus 1.3 magnitude until March 25th. And then at that point, right around the time that Mercury goes retrograde, that's when then Mercury will disappear from the evening sky and go into the interior underworld. If no one has ever really clearly seen Mercury, these next few weeks is the prime time for that. Mercury's greatest elongation, and in this particular synod, it's only 18 degrees, but it still remains the most easily visible one in the Northern Hemisphere, and that's going to be on the 15th of March, actually, the greatest elongation. Also associated with seeing Mercury so nice in the evening sky is that it will also be dancing all month in the vicinity of Venus. And most everybody, I would think, by now will have had a chance to see that Venus has risen as an evening star after coming out of a long underworld time period. By the end of the month, Venus is like blazing at minus 3.9 and will be in this dance easily back and forth, closing in and then separating from Mercury. There's actually two conjunctions that happen in March. We'll go through that more as we go through the day by day for March. Then meanwhile, in the morning sky, and this is also something really, really worth getting up for, is the string of three planets that are arrayed in one of the most interesting of all parts of the sky, which is around the Scorpion and the Archer. And we've got Mars during March rapidly brightening. I mean, it goes from plus 0.8 to plus 0.3 by the end of the month. And then as we go through April, May, June, it's just going to just almost like by the day, you'll be able to see it getting brighter and brighter and brighter. until it reaches pretty much as bright as Mars can ever get as we get more toward the summer. But there's Mars that's going to be closing in on Saturn, and then we'll see Mars and Saturn together in the sky. Saturn at plus 0.6. So by the end of the month, Mars is actually going to get brighter than Saturn, while at the beginning of the month, Mars is not as bright as Saturn. So you'll be able to actually see that happening on the morning sky. And then meanwhile, Jupiter's up there too. And Jupiter is in March going to be one of the two planets that changes direction. And so Jupiter will be going retrograde on the 8th of March at 23 Scorpio. So it's kind of like stuck up there at the same point right now, but it's going to be going back towards this, the scales as we go through the next few months. So definitely March is a peak month for having a personal experiential relationship with the five visible planets. Meanwhile, let's take a look at the movement of the planets in March, all of them here. So Mercury begins at around 20 Pisces. On the 22nd, it goes retrograde at 1654 Aries. And then it will be in a retrograde motion so that by the end of March, it's back to 12 Aries. It goes all the way back to 4 Aries when it goes direct on the 15th of April. And then that will clearly establish that this next Mercury synodic overtone is Aries, whichever criterion you use. We in school use the stationary direct point to mark the overtone, but some other astrologers use the conjunction. But whichever one you use, it says definitely an Aries overtone. Meanwhile, Venus is moving from 22 Pisces as we speak, or actually March 1st. And then by the time we get to the end of the March, Venus will have just barely entered into Taurus. So on April 1st, Venus will reach zero Taurus 55. Mars in March is going through such an interesting part of the sky. It starts at 20 Sagittarius. By the end of the March, it'll be at 8 Capricorn. So therefore, it's going to be going over all the different degrees that have been associated with the galactic center. It'll be at 27 Sagittarius in March, which is the actual longitudinal degree of galactic center. But it will also reach zero Capricorn, which is the point of the galactic alignment degree, where the plane of the solar system and the plane of the Milky Way intersect, and at this time period at the turning of the ages, that's zero Capricorn. So that also is saying that Mars is going to be at the solstice, the December solstice point in March. Jupiter stays right around 23 Scorpio the whole month. As I mentioned, Jupiter will be changing direction in March. And what that, of course, also means is that we've had this really long time period of all planets in direct motion. No retrogrades in January, February. And it's one of the longer time periods where there is the possibility, and that includes Chiron, too, by the way, where they're all direct. But that changes in March with Jupiter and Mercury now going into retrograde motion in the month of March. Saturn moves from 7 Capricorn to 8:54 Capricorn. So it's moving almost 2 degrees, actually, in March. So it's for Saturn moving pretty quickly. Also, Uranus is also during in one of its fastest motions. In March 1st, it's at 25:55 Aries, and by the end of March, at 27:29 Aries. And for those that have been tracking this, of course, this is a presaging the fact that we have a big change with Uranus in 2018, in that that after 7 years, it will leave Aries and go into Taurus. Actually, we have a whole class that we're going to do on that. And then Neptune is moving from 1347 Pisces to 1456 Pisces, a little bit more than a degree in the month. Pluto from 2037 Capricorn all the way to 2110 Capricorn, but it's slowing down as it will be go into a retrograde motion by April. The nodes aren't moving very much. They're still kind of in that that phenomena that happens whenever there is an eclipse season, which we just passed out of, where the nodes will stay pretty much at the same degree or within 1 degree or so. So the nodes are at 1451 Leo as we begin the month of March, and then finally starting to move in their retrograde motion. And by April 1st at 1321 Leo, 1321 Aquarius. Chiron is also still moving in direct motion, and it's moving from 2718 Pisces to 2904 Pisces. And this is then just in advance of Chiron moving into a different sign, moving into Aries, and we have a whole class coming up on that. Chiron moving into Aries is a significant point in 2018. We also, and Vesta, for those who love Vesta, is also direct motion, 19 Sag to 29 Sag. So it's actually approaching the galactic center and the December solstice point. Eris in direct motion also. It's moving so slowly, but for those that have been maybe becoming fascinated by Eris, it does reach the 23rd degree of Aries in March in direct motion. So that gives you a little bit of taste of planetary motions in March. I think I've covered the different conjunctions that you're going to see in the morning sky and the evening sky. But now let me just turn it over to you, Kaylin, if there's something that I might have missed there, and then we can begin launching going through the days of March and look at the major things happening.
Yeah, so I guess the main thing I would bring up, and I'm getting a little feedback, so hang on a second, that's better. Still doing it. Okay, I'm turning down my volume, see if that helps. Anyway, Mars is out of bounds this month as well, and that always happens whenever planets are in the late degrees of Sagittarius going in, you know, across the zero Capricorn point into the early degrees of Capricorn. So that's going to start in March 17th. And that adds to, I know we'll talk more about this, but just wanted that mm-hmm. for people to know that. And any out of balance planet is considered a wild card factor, that things that happen during that time when that, it's like that planet doesn't always behave in the way you would imagine that it would do that because it's outside the boundaries of ordinary reality, so to speak.
It's like another species similar to retrograde, but a somewhat different characteristic. It's rather than simply reversing what we assume with a direct relative to retrograde, this is something that is more erratic. I mean, I love the expression wild card for it. And this, I think, is a major feature of where the Mars cycle is. We'll get into that as we go through the month.
Right. So I think that's the main thing I would offer at this point.
We might have, maybe to frame the whole month, Kaylin, I guess you can bring up what's going to be on a lot of people's minds. Is that whole issue of the blue moon again, you know, of like two full moons in a month.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so we start March 1st with a full moon and end March 31st with a full moon. And so what happened, I think the original definition of a blue moon, and this was something that was published back in the 30s or 40s, and an astronomical magazine was that really the original thought was a blue moon was when there were four full moons in a season. So from, say, December solstice to spring equinox, or spring equinox to June solstice, or March equinox to June solstice. And we don't have that happening this year. And basically when that happens, there are 13 full moons from, say, December solstice to December solstice. We will have two full moons in a month. The Gregorian calendar, the way that it's set up is it's not completely connected to the moon cycle. It's some months are 30 days, some months are 31 days. We have February. We had no full moon in February because it was only 28 days, and January 31st had a full moon, and March 1st has a full moon, skipping February altogether. And that just is a feature of our calendar, the way that our calendar is set up. So this really isn't remarkable from that perspective, when we understand that the calendar that we have is not designed to look at the full moons from a more lunar perspective. Our calendar is set up to be a solar calendar. And actually, the other thing that's interesting to note is that February is a short month because when Julius Caesar's month was 31 days, Augustus Caesar wanted his month to be 31 days. So they took days from February and put them in their month, and that's why we have this like weird skewed kind of thing.
This particular subject is one of the key factors in our cosmology courses to have this larger historical view of the attempt of ancient cultures and more modern cultures to try to figure out how to synchronize the moon, to fit the moon cycle into the yearly cycle. One of the ways was to take the 29.5 day moon cycle, and then that was called a month, you know, and but that doesn't fit in. I mean, you can have 12 of those and it doesn't come up equal to the year. Other cultures would use the 27.3 and they'd round it off to 28, and then they would come up with 13 months in a year, moons in a year. I mean, neither one of them fits in. And then we have the artifact of secular culture, as Kaylin just explained, to create this situation where it is indeed mathematically possible to have two new moons and or two full moons in a month, but it has virtually zero cosmological significance.
Yeah, and the other thing that occurs to me about that is that, of course, July, named after Julius Caesar, is a summer month, and August after Augustus is also a summer month. They wanted their months to be celebrated in the summer. So that's and they sort of put those months in there and then just screwed up the whole counting, because September is actually 10, but it's 9. It's the ninth month. And October is actually 7. September 7, October is actually 8. But because those 2 months got inserted before them, those numbering names of the months don't make any sense.
Well, there's another story on that, which is that it goes back to when the fact that March was the first month, because it was the month that was the beginning of the year, and then that changed around, so they had to change it to, so now we have the October, the 10th month, which is not
right.
October means 8. Ock is 8.
Right.
It's basically skewed off by 2 because March used to be the first month.
Right. Well, that's one way to look at it as well. Or that there were these other months that were inserted in there that didn't really have anything to do with the counting. Anyway, it's all interesting to just be aware of the challenges that we face around that.
There is an ancient understanding of this that does come into our experience of this March, and that is that the ancient Greeks and the Sumerians and the Babylonians, actually the ancient Greeks got it from the Babylonians and the Sumerians, which is that they would have their new year be the appearance of the closest tiny crescent moon. The visibility of the new moon that was closest to the spring equinox, the Aries equinox, which was their new year, and it turns out that this month in March, The exact, the invisible new moon is March 17th. The equinox is the 20th. So it's almost precisely on the spring equinox point that you're going to be able to see that first little crescent moon. And that's a way of integrating lunar and solar to tune into what in the last few millennium, certainly all the way back to the Sumerians, was the what they recognized as the point of new year.
Right, and just in case people aren't aware, the way that the new moon is calculated now, because we can do this now, is based on when the sun and the moon are exactly conjunct. You cannot see the moon at that time. So most cultures celebrated the new moon when that first crescent was visible, but hence the reason they would wait until the crescent was visible in order to celebrate the new year or the, yeah, you know, the seasonal change or shift or whatever that might be. So I think it's really interesting that those are coinciding, and I think that does empower this equinox in an amazing way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it certainly fits into our shamanic astrology approach that it's to have the foundation of this as much as possible be what you can actually see with your eyes. You know, so the actual first visibility of the crescent moon is the way virtually every culture on the planet recognized the new moon. And then this one is, of course, the recognition of a new year. That stems back to the time when the galactic alignment was at the solstices, was at the equinoxes 6,000 years ago, as opposed to now it's at the solstices, not the equinoxes.
Right. So that, yeah. So that it's been a one quarter turn through the sky.
Yeah. So March begins. The main events of March. It begins with the full moon at 11 Virgo. 23 minutes Virgo on March 1st.
Right around the exact point being around 4:51 p.m. Pacific time or 7:51 p.m. Eastern time or March 2nd where you are, Daniel.
Yeah.
You're ahead of time. You're ahead of us by a day-ish there.
And on that same day there is for those that really enjoy trines, there is a nice Venus-Jupiter trine at 23 Pisces, 23 Scorpio on that day.
Right, yes.
Then as we move up to March 4th, and that date seems to inspire a certain sense specialness, doesn't it? March 4th. Where have I heard that before?
It happens to be one of my favorite days.
The only day of the year that is a sentence.
Right.
March 4th.
Exactly. And some would say a command, March 4th.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So on that day, there's two things that show up that I think are important. We have the Sun conjunct Neptune on that day. Now, the Sun and Neptune come together every year. I mean, that's a yearly conjunction. But it happens to be March 4th, and it's at around 14 Pisces. So that would be a window of, we could call it the emphasis being on altered states, on expanded awareness of the mystical insight of a dreamy, visionary kind of experience then. I'm giving the positive take on it as opposed to, I don't know who I am. I'm totally confused. but then
right,
the,
a
also,
lot of,
go ahead.
I'm having a lot of illusions about life.
Right.
Another challenge of that, yeah.
Yes, life's illusions that I recall. I really don't know life at all.
Exactly.
In the words of the song. then we have Mercury conjunct Venus. That's one of we talked about that a few minutes ago. And so that would be in the morning. I'm sorry, in the evening sky.
Yes.
the first of this exact points of the dance of Mercury and Venus during the month. And that's at 27 Pisces, where that will be in the sky. The following day, Mercury moves into Aries, March 5th. And then on March 6th, Venus moves into Aries also. So it's like they're right. So it's not only that this conjunction is happening around 27 Pisces on the 4th, but if you continue to look at Mercury and Venus in the evening sky, it'll be on those days, 5, 6, 7 March, that they'll be located right at the spring equinox point, zero Aries. And we consider those solstice and equinox points to be very important critical degrees. You know, they actually break the yearly calendar up into their true cosmological portions. And to have Mercury and Venus right there, that's also reminding us that the Sun will shortly be there by the time we get to the equinox.
You know, it's also because Venus is returning to the point it was in the sky when she rose as morning star last year on March 31st, and
yes.
You know, began her new cycle. So I think that was right around 1 Aquarius. Aries. And so she's right there, right back to that kind of point in the sky, that balance point, you know, the equal day and night kind of place that we experience when the Sun is there. And we're getting close to that, of course, but it's also just that place where Venus is, you know, we could say she's fully coming back to this essence that she began her journey, her descent journey into the underworld, and, you know, having to die to all the ways that don't work anymore so that she can be reborn into something new. And we could really see this, her return to Aries as a part of that, you know, as she's rising into the evening sky to take on her fully initiated, you know.
We've used that as one of the cross checks on the criterion on how to understand the Venus synodic cycle, that the rising in the evening corresponds to the rising in the morning in the same sign.
Right. And it's usually, I mean, sometimes it's not always exact, because it was in Pisces when it officially rose and it was able to be seen mm-hmm. before the 19th. Some people were able to see it before that, but in this particular cycle. But it's so close to that point, like really in the same part of the sky.
And also invariably when you get to the first gate, which happens this month, that it will be in the sign that she rose in at the beginning of the cycle.
Yes, and that's one of the features that we've really noticed, is that when Venus is in the sign, back in the sign of its overtone or metagoddess, and, you know, the energy that it was starting the cycle in, when it comes back at that first gate at the same sign, that lets us know that we're really on track with that. Yeah.
And this Mercury-Venus conjunction that is happening with Venus as she rises from the underworld, the exterior underworld, her long underworld time, does have an approximation with what was happening 5,000 years ago, where speculation here is that the Sumerians, when they honored the Venus cycle as a correlate with the journey of Inanna into the underworld, that Mercury, Ninshubar, would be there with her when she began the journey, which would be back, you know, last year in April. Mercury is there to assist her right before she goes into the underworld, and then is there to greet her when she comes out of the underworld. And this particular synodic cycle of Venus would only happen every 8 years. The Aries overtone or metagoddess is the one that was used in their every eight-year ceremonial 5,000 years ago. So, you know, the orbits shift a little bit, so it's not precisely as elegant as it would have been 5,000 years ago, but it's the way that Ninshubar, the messenger, the aide, the helper of Venus, is kind of preparing her for her journey, is preparing her for a descent into the underworld, which would have been last fall, and then is here to greet her as she comes up. And we can see that played out on the evening sky now.
And really, in the five synodic cycles of Venus that happen every 8 years, creating that pentagram in the sky, that five-pointed yes. star, this is the one that they were yeah. telling stories of Inanna and Ishtar around yeah. because it matched. I mean, it's like that was why they Ninjabar was included in the story, because there they were together. And yeah. Yeah, and so it makes total sense when we work with this particular cycle of Venus more than any other, that we really get the sense of how the story was created based on what was going on in the sky. So it's pretty cool.
Yes. So then we get up to March 8th, and that's the first shift in planetary motion, ending this long time period of all planets in direct motion. So on March 8th, the 23 Scorpio, 13 minutes, Jupiter is going stationary retrograde. And as I mentioned earlier, it will then track back to the scales.
Yeah, you know, something that I thought was interesting about this, Daniel, was that we had this all planets moving forward, nobody going retrograde, backward, whatever that's about, from January 2nd to March 8th. But all of January and well into February, we had Venus in the underworld.
Yes.
So even though she was moving forward, she was still in this deep initiation of death and rebirth. And I think that I feel like I've seen some indicators of where it's like where shadow was coming up, where people's stuff was coming up, that kind of thing was happening, and maybe was I don't know, like a way of maybe slowing down that forward motion, or having to spotlights shown on specific things that would be different than maybe it would be a time when there wasn't one of the underworld times of Mars or Mercury or Venus.
Well, but another thought, I mean, we're just trying to formulate our views on this. It's like nothing dogmatic here. But, you know, one thought I have is that when all planets are direct, there's actually less capacity to even pay attention to shadow. I mean, it's like a time period of pretending like that interior realm and what can actually happen when planets are retrograde, which is to get deeper, you know, and to think, rethink things, to have an alternative view about how things are is suspended. And so it's like, okay, well, just not even pay attention to the interior,
right.
with the exception, of course, what you're bringing up, which is Venus was also in the underworld too.
Yeah, you know, and the other thought is, like, if you're just moving forward and you're not, like, taking time to check out, like, how is this action, you know, is this something that's working or not working, and, you know, you just keep moving forward anyway, right? It's like that reckless sort of, you know, I'm just plowing on ahead and I'm not paying any attention to what the feedback is on this. That can be one of the challenges of the time when it's all direct.
Yeah, well, then, so if we think of it that way, well, then the fact that Jupiter now is going to go back to the scales, you know, it's kind of like, well, gee, maybe I missed something.
Yeah, exactly. yep.
On March 9th, then we have the moon coming up to conjunct Mars. And this is always a very critical point in the Mars cycle. And we're now in this most interesting time period of the Mars cycle, which is the elder wisdom. I mean, that's the idealism on this particular phase. Just before Mars will, it's when Mars actually is going back to the sign that it began the journey in. It's because the overtone of this particular Mars cycle is Sagittarius. And so that's when Mars returns to that a year and a half later, that we know we're getting to the end of the Mars cycle. And then this particular phase of the Mars process lasts until Mars goes into the sign of the next birth, the next overtone, which is Aquarius. So we've got this whole time period of Mars moving through Sagittarius and Capricorn, which is this elder knowledge time frame. And the punctuation point on that is when the moon is with Mars this month, which is March 9th at 26 Sag. I mean, like right at almost the exact alignment with the galactic center. And then in April, there will be another moon-Mars conjunction in this elder wisdom phase of the Mars cycle.
It's one thing to tune into the moon conjunct Mars, but during that time period in the month, you know, like the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th of March,
you're going to see the moon form conjunctions with Saturn and with Mars and with Jupiter. That's quite a beautiful sight in the morning sky when that happens, particularly when there's all these, you know, with these three planets there. Every morning it'll be like a slightly different triangle, you know, a slightly different configuration as the moon gets with Saturn and Mars and Jupiter.
That's pretty exciting, actually, because I got to see that last month when the moon came by Jupiter and then Mars and then Saturn, and it was like boom, 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 right, you know, those few days. And seeing it, as I saw it approach Mars and then with Mars, and then I saw it approach Jupiter and with Jupiter, you know, and then it was so stunning to see. So if you get a chance to see it, and you don't have to get up super early. I mean, if you're up, you know, 5:36, not terrible. Then, it is getting light earlier now, but you can see that crescent moon coming along to connect with them. And then, of course, the other thing that's interesting and just part of the presaging of our 2020 year, is that the moon on the 11th will catch up to Pluto. We can't see that, but we can know that morning when we're looking at that crescent moon that Pluto's nearby. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking of presaging, what happens I think it's May, or it might be March, April, May, in that zone of 2020, that is when Mars will be back to Capricorn and will actually form that alignment with Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto in Capricorn.
Yeah, you know, and that also brings up something else I wanted to mention, I forgot to mention earlier, Daniel, that is that this month, within about 4 degrees, and we're getting close to the end of this happening in the, you know, the signs of the culture bearer or the householder, Uranus square Pluto, around 4 degrees pretty much the whole entire month, and, you know, kind of in that range, although Pluto's going to go retrograde, and so it, you know, it separates out a little bit more as Uranus continues to move forward. So we've got this sort of close square still that's been going on now. It started, in 2012?
Yeah.
And there were the seven conjunctions, and the, you know, but we still have them kind of hanging out in this dance together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then we have some trine action. On March 11th, Mars trine Uranus. 27 Sag, 27 Aries. And on March 13th, Sun trine Jupiter. But then we also have on that very same day Saturn square Venus. I do like to put in and add to our considerations here that when the planets are in these relationships with each other. So that's Saturn square Venus on the 13th. And then on the 15th, I mentioned it before, but I'll just bring it in here as we go through the month. That's the date in the evening sky is when Mercury is at the greatest elongation. It'll be at 18 degrees separate from the sun. And we'll be right up there with Venus. You know, not the exact conjunction on that day, but they're really close. Then that leads up to the next big event in March, which is the new moon, which we mentioned as the closest new moon to the equinox, to the Aries equinox, and that will happen at the exact new moon is at 26 Pisces 53, and by the time the little crescent is seen,
it'll be, you know, pretty much right at zero Aries to have an opportunity to have that synchronization of the lunar and the solar calendar. And then at the fact, Kaylin, interestingly, that is happening within the Venus synodic cycle that is all about Aries, the last one, actually.
Yes. The last one for a long time. I think it's like 155 years before we'll have another point of the pentagram rising in the sign of Aries. And so on March 18th, the moon will be with Venus and Mercury in the evening sky. Also on the 17th, Mars has moved into Capricorn. So it's right on the galactic path.
Mars. Mars at one of these critical points, you know, right at the solstice point, at the same time that that Venus and Mercury are, you know, real close to the other, you know, to the equinox point.
Yeah, exactly. And then, this moon conjunction with Venus, and of course Mercury's there too, is really when Venus gets her royal robe back. And one of the things that I noticed, Daniel, that I had never really noticed before is that image of Aphrodite rising up out of the off the shell, and you know,
yes,
I can't think of the artist's name right now, but anyway, she's rising up naked, and there's a being with a red robe or a red thing to put around her. It's like coming up to her to put that around her. So it's representative of that. You know, when she rises up, the first thing she gets back is her royal robe. It's not really a robe looking. But it does. It's red. So I thought that was really interesting when I noticed that.
And who knows? Maybe that is another. That could be thought of as another way of seeing Mercury.
Right, Mercury bringing her robe. Like, here, you can get dressed now. Get your life force back. Yeah. And then on the 19th, Venus and Mercury are exactly conjunct again. So. Yeah. Yeah.
At 16, then that'll be at 16 Aries at that point. It's really pretty wild how the entire month, almost the entire month, at least up to the 25th of March, is this visible dance between Mercury and Venus. Like, kind of like a long celebration. It's not just like 3 days does Mercury greet her, but then Mercury is really, really attending to her big time after her underworld journey.
Yeah. Yeah, so beautifully said.
And then we have the equinox itself on March 20th. I wrote down here 9:16 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time is the exact point. And take note of the fact that if you're going to do ceremony for the equinox, you really have to catch it at the closest sunrise or the closest sunset, because the sun is moving so fast. We see that here at our two houses over here, that at this time of year, how fast how much a difference there is about where the sunrises and sunsets are compared to how it was during the solstices. So you have to catch it on the very day in order to have it be exactly east or west, unlike the solstices where you've got like a, you know, 3, 4, 5 days. You know, if you miss the exact solstice, we'll check it the next day because it'll be the same.
Right, and it actually at the solstices is kind of in the same part of the sky for about 3 weeks. I mean, it doesn't move very much. It's kind of just hanging, suspended there. Whereas at the equinoxes, it's just moving so fast along the horizon. Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. I always like to create events that would honor both the you know, the closest sunset and the closest sunrise to the exact point. So those of you on the West Coast would choose certainly the morning of the 20th, but I guess you could do The previous evening and also that evening would be pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then we get up to March 22nd, and that's the point where Mercury is beginning It's a retrograde cycle at 1654 Aries. And it's right around that time. There's usually a pretty close correspondence between the point of retrograde and when it disappears from the evening sky, and the point where Mercury goes direct and when it is conceivably visible, depending on whether you're in northern or southern hemisphere, when Mercury becomes then visible in the morning sky. So this whole time frame from Mercury stationary retrograde on the 22nd, we'll begin to lose sight of Mercury, and then around the 15th of April is that when you begin to see Mercury in the morning sky at the point of Mercury going direct. And it's all, of course, happening in the sign of Aries, hence the Aries overtone the Mercury overtone for the cycle that will begin here shortly is Aries. So then we have like all the overtones, all the, you know, like all in fire, you know, so Mars and Sag and Venus and Aries and then here's Mercury also there, Aries, fire sign.
Right. So the energy potentially could be moving very quickly around those three particular expressions of the mind, of the divine masculine, of the divine feminine, not hanging around and, you know, stagnant at all. It would be, you would imagine.
The thing, though, that is, I think, helpful here is that we're now in the elder wisdom phase of Mars, Sagittarius, and then we also have the evening star expression of Venus, Aries, and in both cases, then you have a bit more of a sense of being able to think before rash action. You know,
it's and like Mercury that. Also, being evening is towards the end of its cycle, as well.
But when it rises as morning star, then
right.
It's at the fullness of the Aries, you know, totally intuitive and, you know, shoot from the hip and say it as it is, you know. But I always like to see whatever sign it is, that the evening star Venus is the one that, as Jarre put it, you know, you do think before you take action, as opposed to the morning star, which is intended to be action before over analyzing.
Right. So then, I just think it's also interesting to see that on the 23rd, Venus is square Pluto, as she's, you know, at that first gate, the root chakra gate. So whatever shadow pieces maybe that she's still processing in order to really fully embrace a healthy root chakra experience.
That also could be an area, a time period energetically that would be a bit tense, because the very next day is the Sun square Mars quadrature, you know, still very close to the solstice point. It'll be at 4 Capricorn. And generally the quadrature points, the square point, is called crisis in action. You know, there'll be an impulse to take some kind of action that you might be compelled to do, you know, that it's like being hit by something, and then you take action. And that, I think, would be a most important time to eschew recklessness at that point.
Right.
And then that's followed by Venus conjunct Uranus on the 28th, which is another kind of tense little window there. Venus conjunct Uranus, not that's anything, you know, that can be exciting, actually. Venus conjunct Uranus on the 28th to 27 Aries. But the very next day is the one of the two quadratures of the Sun and Saturn, Sun square Saturn. You know, and so on the 24th, we have Sun square Mars, and on the 29th, Sun square Saturn. And the reason why they're so close together is because of Mars and Saturn are so close together. So that little window of time there, the council there, I think, would be to beware of letting rash, impulsive, reckless actions run oneself at that point, to notice that what might be coming up is deep instinctual energies that you're wanting to react to, you know, and to at that point to not over-literalize anything.
You know, something else, you brought up Eris a little earlier too, Daniel, and I think it's around the 25th of March that Venus will be with Eris, around 22, 23 degrees of Aries. And Eris is also, you know, she's the goddess of discord. and you must invite her to the party or she's going to disrupt things, which mm-hmm. may not be a bad thing. But
it's like the way in which the different actional expressions of the feminine on the planet right now has been taken action finally, you know, like a really aggressive action toward the patriarchy. Well, who knows what monkey wrench will be thrown into it during that time?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to pay attention and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I just, of course, from my perspective, just love finally that it's out in the open, being able to describe so clearly what the problems have been. You know, it's basically that thing I call the triple aberration: hierarchical patriarchy, patrilineal family descent, and monotheistic fundamentalism. And you know, it's really pretty extreme right now. It's being called out, but then at the same time, you know, the those that are pushing back, I mean, they don't have any compulsion about saying, yeah, we got to keep women in their place. It is all about patriarchy. We're going to be giving up 10,000 years of history if we allow this to happen. You know, I mean, it's pretty wild what's happening out there regarding this issue all over the world, not just the U.S.
It's like trying to stop the tsunami. I don't think they can. They can. They can maybe slow it down for a little while, but I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it's I mean. But just for the sake of the peoples of the planet and the planet herself, it has to be eliminated from from being allowed to run the system.
Right.
Venus moves into Taurus on March 30th, and then we have the second full moon of the month on March 31st, and that's at 10:45 Libra. And I love this particular full moon because the full moon is going to be relatively close to Spica. And what's happened is that because of precession, this full moon is the one that used to be the full moon the closest to Lammas, or not Lammas, sorry, Candlemas, or St. Bridget's Day. And it was the fullness of the journey of the feminine. It was kind of like the opposite point to when Spica would go into the underworld. We've discussed this in the past, that, you know, Spica is like the stellar stand-in for Venus. There's many ancient ceremonies that were associated with when Spica went into the underworld. But also when the full moon was closest to Spica, which used to be in February, now it's in late April or late March or April because of precession. But this would be the time of the radiance and the glory of the feminine at her in her power. This particular full moon, because it's you know, pretty close to Spica. So I just like to bring that in also to this celebration of the expansion of the feminine here.
Yes. Absolutely. Let's celebrate.
Mm-hmm. And to have another feature of, you know, putting into anything else we talked about regarding the exposing the triple aberration of patriarchy and dominator consciousnesses.
Yep, absolutely. So are we ready to open it to questions, comments, ahas?
I think so. I mean, I think we've covered all the main points here. Certainly we could have missed something here, but we'll leave it up to our listeners to point that out.
All right, so if you have a question, you have a chart question, something personal, you can ask that too. Press star 6, that'll put you in the queue. It'll ask you to press 1 to raise your hand, and then we can talk to you. So, and if not, then we'll just complete the call. So nobody has jumped in yet, so if you're thinking about it, I say go for it. Oh, good, we have somebody now. Okay, I think this is Annalise.
Hi, yes.
Hi.
Hey. So I just finished the script and archetypes course, which I really liked. There were some times that I really wanted to be there in person with you guys, but it's also nice to enjoy it from the comfort of my home. But since taking that course, it's kind of opened me up a little bit, and I was able to kind of witness Scorpio energy for what it actually is. For a while, I was getting it mixed up with Capricorn, and I just had an experience recently with my mom, who's Mercury in Scorpio, and then a friend of mine is Scorpio rising, and I just kind of got to actually witness that, like, what it is to, like, control and run the energy and, like, the way that they communicate and stuff like that. So it was kind of cool to kind of draw that line, because I don't know why I was getting it mixed up before. I was thinking that what was actually Capricorn was Scorpio. And kind of following on that Scorpio theme, I noticed that, like, a lot of the traditional descriptions of Scorpio say that it's like the intensity of sexuality, but I almost feel like that's kind of a patriarchal way to describe it, because I feel like it's intensity in general about life, like enthusiasm and excitement about like life in general, and not, you know, I don't know, to me pinning that as like a sexuality thing or just about sex seemed kind of off. So I was just curious, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that.
Well, yeah, sure. It really has to do with in most of these descriptions about signs tends to be the shadow expression of the way those signs have been understood. Our definition of Scorpio, as I think you now know, is having the courage to explore the edge of aliveness.
Yeah.
So it's like it's about the edge and beyond the edge of feeling most alive, but there's been so much judgments against that, and so therefore the Scorpio training is allowing oneself to actually allow those instinctual and visceral and emotional and feeling function energies to come through for yourself, so you get to experience it, which is why like. Really healthy Scorpio doesn't really have to impose anything. You know, they're not, they actually carry that energy so strongly within themselves because they're open to experiencing it. Sexuality is simply only one expression of that. It can be in music and dance and creativity but just a sense of giving yourself permission to feel as alive as you can feel.
Cool.
Yeah. That's a beautiful insight, Annalise. Thank you.
It's pretty funny that one could be confusing Capricorn with Scorpio, but I kind of understand it because so much of the way that the sun sign Scorpio, they always are emphasizing stuff like, you know, it's repressed or secretive or inward. I mean, it's like kept down. A repressed Scorpio. A repressed Scorpio might look like a contained Capricorn, but they're coming from completely different places.
That's possible. I also, you know, I had it was kind of a roommate of mine who's also a really close friend from years ago. She, I didn't know till recently, is Scorpio Sun, Venus in Scorpio, and then Capricorn Moon. And I think she, to me, like, seemed like a total Scorpio, and maybe she like had both of those energies. So that's, I don't know, maybe that's where the impression got planted or something. But yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's I love it when there is a liberated and openness to really be without judgment against Scorpio, and that's alive in oneself. You put it together with Capricorn. I mean, that's an incredibly a powerful mixture, because it includes the interior. It includes the responsibility that can come from Capricorn. But without the repression, that it generally will show up where it's in judgment against Scorpio. But when you put those two together in a healthy way, it's unstoppable.
Yeah, I agree. She was a powerful person, so I totally agree.
Beautiful. Thank you, Annalise.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, I'm not sure who this is, but it says you're calling in on Skype.
Hi there, it's Bo calling. How are you guys?
How are you guys? Okay, good.
I just wanted to, I just love to hear a little bit more about these. Almost seems like bookends. These full moons, two of them in January and two of them in March. And I don't know how frequently does that happen, that we have this many close together, and how does that tie into the eclipse season?
It doesn't tie into the eclipse. We at the beginning of the call, we discussed that it's really an art. It's because of the fact that the months have different lengths, and that so it's not a cosmological feature. You would not find the phenomena of so-called blue moons, of either two full moons or two new moons, having any relationship to the nodal cycles. So that they're entirely separate phenomena. One is an artifact of the secular calendar, and the other, though, is truly significant about what happens in an eclipse season. The eclipse season itself is super important, particularly if you have degrees on your own chart that are close to where the nodal axis is. Because during an eclipse season, the nodes stay at the same degree for a fairly long period of time. The connection, though, can be that if the full moon or the new moon points, not related to whether there's two in a month, but if those degrees happen to be close to the nodal axis, or if those degrees happen to be close to the degrees, special degrees or critical degrees on your own chart.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's somehow I thought that you were tying those together somehow, and it didn't make sense to me. So that's what I was curious about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so if the degrees can match up. I mean, like I had a huge number of clients just over the last 3 or 4 weeks that had really important degrees on their charts, and it's not always that they were in a nodal. They weren't necessarily at their nodal return or their nodal reversal, but there was something really important on their chart that was at the degrees or close to the degrees of the full moon and the new moon that were in the eclipse season, and so that's important, but not because there's two full moons in a month or two new moons in a month.
Okay, thank you. Great.
So, Bill, I also just want to follow up on that and say that this pattern will repeat every time we have a full moon on January 1st, because February is a short month, unless it happens to be a leap year. February is a short month, so it skips over February, no full moons. There'll be two in January, two in March. And that happens every so often, but it's not significant in terms of the cosmology, as Daniel was just explaining.
Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, thanks. And here we go. This is Caroline?
Hi.
Hi.
Caroline here.
Is this Caroline? Which
not yet.
Hey, hello. Yeah.
Hey. I'm curious if you guys know of any work on Mars synodic cycles.
You know, I saw you posted that, and I saw it in the midst of this call. And I haven't had a chance to respond. Yeah, well, actually, Eric and I are doing a 26-month. We've actually been tracking the whole thing. We have a class going on about it. Also, I've written a number of papers, articles about it, but right now we're near the end of it. I'm in phase five of the whole synod is happening right now. I brought that up during this call. I thought you were in that class.
I have not done the synodic cycles class, no.
Okay, well, we have that one ongoing. I mean, I could send you a sample of it from the from our last meeting last week.
Yeah, that would be awesome because I've learned a little bit about Venus and Mercury, but haven't heard right. much about Mars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I first wrote the articles about the Venus synodic cycle back in 1997. Which is actually what sparked the whole synodic movement that's happening right now. Those are Mountain Astrologer articles, but it was also one on Mars. So, I can send you the article as well as the class summary from the last one we did.
And just for everybody to know that the Mars articles that were done in the Mountain Astrologer, they are posted on the member site under resources. Things, and there's also tables for Venus, Mars, and Mercury, so you can figure out where you were and born into the like what's the overtone that you have and that kind of thing, and maybe perhaps also when you are going to have your next return for any of those three. And those are in the resources on the member site.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. And I have one question for clarity because I was talking to Gemini again about Mercury
yes.
over mines. And I know you guys have two different approaches to it. So you mm-hmm. look at when Mercury is visible. Is that when the overtone begins?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So actually, way back when I first came up with the format, which is when I was in a Mercury return when I was 52, so this goes back to 2000 and year 2000. At that time, I actually followed the protocol that others use, which is that it's the conjunction point, the interior conjunction,
right.
while Mercury is retrograde, and that would establish the overtone. But then I did some research into how the Babylonians looked at it. And they divided it up based upon the visibility more rather than like an invisible conjunction.
Right.
And so that's when I began to notice that the almost invariably the visibility points correspond to within a few days anyway of the point of retrograde and the point of going direct. So we actually establish the overtone of the Mercury synod with the point when Mercury goes direct.
Okay, interesting.
You may not remember this, but I think when we first started doing, we did a thing like we do with Venus using the 10-degree orb
yeah.
from the sun. But Mercury is often not visible when it's 10 degrees from the sun, depending on
right.
its declination and all of that. So then we decided, well, we'll just go with the, what most of them do, and that is with the conjunction, because that's easier to predict and figure out anyway. And then there was a point where it became clear that that actually working with the visibility, there's a much better chance it's going to be visible when it's stationing direct. And Daniel found that research about the how the ancients had done
Babylonian.
It. Yeah, so that that made much more sense. So then we recreated all the tables again. Mercury anyway,
but in the case of the current one, the one that's going to be unfolding here by the end of the month, whichever if you use the conjunction or you use the point of stationary direct, it's still Aries.
Yeah. So if it's when it's stationing direct, it's not 15 degrees away from its conjunction to the sun, is it? Within a couple of days,
it's probably about 15. Yeah. So the stationary direct point on you can look it up. If you have, I can look it up here. But the stationary direct point is on the 15th.
It's actually going to be about 20 degrees
mm-hmm.
on the in April. So it varies.
Oh, wow.
Each cycle is a little bit different, but it's going to be at least 15 degrees, and it might be, like we're looking at this one, it's about 20 degrees. So.
Wow.
But the greatest elongation is only 18.
But that's in before the retrograde starts.
Right, this month. Right. I'm not sure what the greatest elongation is for the next synod. I haven't looked ahead to that.
And I'm looking at not the degrees from the sun. I'm looking at, in terms of elongation. But I'm looking at the degrees, like, sun at around 24 and a half Aries and Mercury at about 4.5 Aries. Direct. So that's what I'm looking at.
Yes, I see. Yeah. So it's a few days if you did the 10 degree or the 20, but to keep it simple, we do it at the point of stationary direct.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Thank you.
Sure. So I'll try to remember to do that when we get off this call to send you some of the Mars stuff. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd love to take that course.
We're starting it in but then we're also doing our online synodic cycle class starting in April.
Oh, okay. I'll wait for that.
Yeah,
so that'll cover some things about the moon, and we'll go into the moon stuff first, and then it'll be followed by Venus and Mars and Mercury. So we'll cover all four of those as far as the synodic cycles in that class over 6 months.
Cool.
Yeah. It's cool to do it live. Then you can ask your questions.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Does that answer everything for you, Caroline?
Yeah, that's it for right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So I think we're complete with this class then, because there's nobody else in the queue. So we hope everybody has a fabulous March, and we'll look forward to connecting with you whenever we do down the road.
Fabulous.
Anything you want to
say? Thanks.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All right.